And now we move on to our weekly opinion page feature. On Mondays, we highlight an op-ed piece that appeared in newspapers over the weekend and speak with the author. Today, we talk with Isabel Coleman, Senior Fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. Her article appeared in the Sunday Point section of the Dallas Morning News. In it, she says the Middle East has the fastest-growing labor force of any part of the world. 65% of the population today is under the age of 25. With this coming youth bulge, she argues that jobs, rather than nuclear war or terrorism, may be the biggest problem facing the region. Have you been to the Middle East lately? What's the job situation like for young people? Is there a looming job crisis? Join the conversation. Call us at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Isabel Coleman joins us now from radio station WRHU in Hempstead, New York. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Bye. First of all, how did you come to this analysis? Do you generally analyze sort of the unemployment and job situation sort of internationally, or is there something that you noticed that sparked your inquiry in this direction?
Well, my regional focus is the Middle East, the greater Middle East, including Iran and Afghanistan, Pakistan. When I look at that part of the world, the work I do encompasses broadly politics and economics and social trends and many different types of issues. And I'm certainly not the first person to talk about the jobs crisis in the Middle East. It's something that's been brewing for a decade or more. I mean, it's been on the horizon, you know, the baby boom that is going on right now, and these young people who are already born, we've known about them for a long time. We can see how they're moving through the demographics of the region and how they will be entering the labor force. And what was discussed with some urgency 10 and 15 years ago is literally becoming a crisis now, as tens of millions of young people enter the job market and there simply are no jobs.
And your analysis includes the oil-rich countries also, doesn't it?
It does.
And the reason I ask is that I think that Americans might just find it puzzling how it is that countries that have this, what they perceive as a reservoir of oil wealth, could also at the same time have an unemployment problem.
Well, the high oil prices take the sting off for those countries. But even just a few years ago, they had experienced over a decade of low oil prices, and a country like Saudi Arabia was experiencing its own economic problems. It was running up its public debt, its government debt. The government had to cut back on a lot of services that it provides its people, and it's the standard of living of your average Saudi had fallen considerably in that decade of low oil prices. But even now, with high oil prices in countries like Saudi Arabia, you've got a situation of wealth without work, which is not a healthy, positive, constructive environment to be in when you have a lot of young people who really just have no hope of landing productive, constructive jobs that they have expectations that they should hold, given their level of education. So even with the money in their pocket, there's still a problem with a lack of jobs.
What created this youth boom or bulge?
Well, you have it in various places around the world where you've had you've had high demographic, high population growth, and falling death rates, increased health, and that has just led to lower incidence of child mortality, all sorts of things that have led to very high population growth rates. And while population growth rates have come down in the Middle East, and they've come down significantly in the past 10 and 15 years, they haven't come down as fast as they have in some other parts of the world, just leading to some still very high population growth in various countries. And I mentioned Saudi Arabia before. Again, it is a country that continues to have high population growth, even though other countries the growth rate has fallen.
I assume that the fear then for Americans is that this idleness, this sense of purposelessness, will lead to radicalization.
Well, I think that's part of the issue. I think you have in many countries people who are. I mean, it's been pointed out frequently that the perpetrators of the 9/11 terrorist acts were not the poorest of the poor. They are, in fact, in some cases, middle income, well educated. Some of them had engineering degrees and scientific degrees. And yet, those people, and you look at the article I wrote, the employment issue is greatest among those with college education. And it's a real mismatch that's occurred between what people are learning in college and what types of jobs are available.
Forgive me, Isabel. I just need to take a short break to
sure.
say you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I'm back with Isabel Coleman, Senior Fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. Ms. Coleman, what are Middle Eastern countries trying to do about this? I mean, surely they recognize, I mean, I'm sure every country is individual, of course, but surely some of these governments recognize this problem. And what are they trying to do about it?
Well, I think they are addressing it with different levels of urgency. And the real crux of the matter is that the deep economic reforms that need to happen to allow a more a conducive economic environment to job growth go along with increased political openness. And at some point, these countries are struggling with allowing the economic changes without allowing the political changes. And that's where the rubber really hits the road. And so you need very deep economic structural reforms in these countries. You need to cut back on some of the labor regulations that exist. You need to provide more opportunities for entrepreneurs and for people to be starting new businesses, reduce the red tape and the bureaucracy, the regulations that prohibit foreign direct investment, just in many different ways be changing the economic side of the equation. But it does entail some political changes, too, and they're reluctant to do those.
Let's take a caller. And this is Tina in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Welcome, Tina.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I grew up in Karachi, Pakistan, and in Cairo, Egypt, and Jakarta, Indonesia. And at least from what I saw living there, it was a much, you know, unemployment, yeah, but it was a much greater issue, at least with the people there, that they had food to eat and some place to sleep at night out of the elements. And I really don't feel we're kind of going about it backwards. In order to have jobs, you need to have some sort of infrastructure that supports the people. And I just don't feel that a lot of developing countries are there yet.
Well, thank you, Tina. Tina, what do you think about that? That there's a sort of a broader sort of just general economic development question rather than just sort of generating jobs.
The countries that we're talking about have made tremendous economic strides in the past couple of generations, and I don't know what years Tina was living in those countries, but they're now middle-income countries for the most part. These are not desperately poor countries that you read about in Africa. These are countries that really are middle-income countries for the most part, and they are getting more and more of their kids in school and graduating more of them from higher education. And the expectations have been raised for their population of what they can expect, and they can't deliver on those expectations. So it really is a pretty profound problem.
What, if anything, can the U.S. do to help the situation?
Well, I think it is important for the United States to engage with the region as a whole on some of the broad economic issues. Certainly encouraging these governments to open up their economies. The United States has some pursued some free trade agreements already with Jordan and Morocco, trying to expand that to other countries. It's in talks with Egypt. Those hold the possibility of increased trade and investment, which would provide some jobs for local people. And I think the United States has every reason to keep this whole issue high on those governments' agendas, so that it really can focus on these very important questions. Because, as you mentioned earlier, I think when you have a lot of people with the expectation of having a job and no jobs, then it does lead to radicalization.
Thank you, Ms. Coleman. That was Isabel Coleman, Senior Fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. Her article appeared in the Sunday Point section of the Dallas Morning News. You can read Isabel Coleman's op-ed and hear all the previous opinion page features at the Talk of the Nations page at npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington.